If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The White House announces a diplomatic boycott of the 2022 Winter Olympics in China, but will this have the intended effect, or is a broader boycott warranted? Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We're joined today by my colleagues, WSJ columnist Bill McGurn and Kim Strassel. The Winter Olympics are scheduled to open in 2 months, February 4th in Beijing. And the context for this move from the White House, beyond China's usual human rights record, is this disappearance of a tennis player. And Bill, that's probably a good place to start. Can you give us an overview and catch people up on what has happened here?
Yeah, Kyle. Her name is Peng Shuai, and she's a very famous international tennis star. I believe she's represented China in the Olympics two or three times before. And what happened is in early November, November 2nd, she posted on Chinese social media an accusation that a former high-ranking party member, Zhang Gaoli, I believe, had sexually assaulted her, you know, forced sex against her will with her. Well, shortly after she made that, that post was taken down, her accounts were scrubbed, and no one heard from her. The Women's Tennis Association in the United States, I think it's done a superb job of highlighting her case and said, you know, we want to talk to her and so forth. And then it's been really murky since then. So when she was missing, suddenly there were a couple of videos of her, one, I believe, having dinner in Beijing. The WTA received an email purportedly from her saying, you know, don't say anything. The allegation was wrong. I'm fine. And they've never been able to confirm that, the WTA. So they announced that they're pulling all their tournaments out of China. So there were kind of stand. The Peng Shuai also made a video call with the International Olympic Committee, you know, which is designed to hold the Olympics in Beijing. And in that, she assured them that she was safe and, you know, no one needed to have a fuss. The problem is no one can verify that she's speaking freely, that she's not being censored, she's not scared. And again, that's why the WTA, for its part, says we can't have any of our tournaments in China this year and maybe next year and so forth. So there we have it. And her case is now sort of more evidence for those people who want to have a boycott of the Chinese Olympics, you know, not just because of her, but because it's treatment of the Uyghurs, of Hong Kong, of all sorts of things that China is doing. So it's front and center, though, because she's so well known and so many sports figures have tweeted about her. You know, where is she and how can we be sure that she's speaking freely?
The White House announcement on Monday was that the Biden administration will not be sending any diplomatic or official delegation to the Olympic Games. But the press secretary, Jen Psaki, was very clear about the limited nature of this action. Here's a piece of what she said.
Everybody can call it whatever they want to call it. I would just remind you that often when you use diplomatic boycott, that phrase, that brings people back to 1980. And we are not. The athletes will be participating. We will be rooting for the athletes from home. I am an Olympics-obsessed person, so I'm looking forward to doing that. But I think this is just an indication that it cannot be business as usual, that not sending a diplomatic delegation sends that message.
So essentially, the athletes can go and compete, but there won't be any diplomats there in the stands cheering them on or at these official events. Kim, is this a good idea? And I guess separate question, will this make any difference?
Well, count me as one of the people who thinks it's probably right that we are not trying to forbid our own athletes from going or boycotting from an athletic perspective. Most of these people train for years of their life to have this opportunity, and saying that they can't go somehow, in some ways, it just feels as though they're being used as political tools when, in fact, the decisions need to be made from an administrative perspective, from a governmental perspective. And that gets to the bigger issue with the diplomatic boycott. One problem with it is just it was actually handled very badly in that apparently the administration made this decision weeks and weeks ago, but decided to sit on it and not announce it to allow some time to pass between when they put it out there and when the president had had his conversation with the Chinese president, Xi Jinping. And so as a result, it leaked and China was able to get ahead of the news and say, well, we weren't going to invite you anyway. Which now makes us look a little bit silly because we're saying that we're not going to attend to games that they're claiming that we didn't have an invitation for. That's one of the problems. The bigger problem is just that, as with so many things with the Biden administration, this diplomatic boycott seems to be instead of much tougher actions that obviously need to be made against China, given all of its abuses. And it's interesting to me. People are talking about Bill, you know, went through the issues with the tennis star. You hear a lot of people talking about China's human rights abuses and the Uyghurs as reasons for this. But let's not forget that, I mean, this is a China that has cracked down in Hong Kong, is making threatening gestures against Taiwan, continues to buy oil from Iran in violation of U.S. sanctions, is engaged with cyber attacks and patent theft against U.S. companies. It's become a rogue international actor. And the reasons for taking steps beyond just a boycott go beyond just the phrase, although it's an important one, human rights abuses.
Well, to Kim's point, I mean, I agree that the slow rollout here was not helpful. On November 16th was the first inkling of this, the Washington Post headline, Biden administration soon to announce diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Olympics. I don't know if that was a leak from the White House or if that was a trial balloon being floated, but now they actually announce it and it hits with all of the force of a 3-week-old news story. And Bill, I mean, that being said, if the choice is whether to send American diplomats to swan around in Beijing and play nice or to not, I think it's hard to fault the Biden administration for answering that question no.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is a classic Biden-esque response to a regime that has proved its belligerence and aggression. It's very hollow. It's not going to have any effect on Xi Jinping. I think Kim would be with me. I would support a boycott of the Olympics if it was the pinnacle of a tough and coherent China policy designed to check them on all fronts, you know, what they're doing on our campuses, what they're doing in the South China Sea, what they're doing in Taiwanese airspace, what they're doing to bully Australia. We need a comprehensive pushback on China, and we're getting mostly words from the Biden administration. But to punish the athletes, I think, is it's not going to do anything to change Xi's behavior. It sort of checks a box. We're doing something, gives the White House something to talk about. But I think it's a pretty hollow gesture. And I think we need real gestures. And one gesture, I think, that would really be extraordinary. I mean, we've had this sort of nuclear deal with Australia, Britain, and us. You know, that's going to see more Australia having more nuclear subs in the area. It's a kind of a pushback on China. That was a good one. I think economically, if Joe Biden could announce that the U.S. was going to rejoin the Trans-Pacific Partnership and went in, that would be very popular among the democracies in Asia or in the region that feel threatened by China. I mean, China's threatening military action against Australia if it supports Taiwan, again, invading Taiwanese airspace. It's prevented the Philippines from resupplying a bunch of Marines that are occupying a ship on one of the islands in the South China Sea. I mean, very aggressive. And these people would love to have an economic arrangement that had the U.S. in and China out. You know, I think before Joe Biden years ago, you know, when Barack Obama was for it, kind of dropped it because labor was opposed. I think the situation has changed, and it would be a healthy pushback on Xi without military force, but it would give people some in the region some hope that they would have more support, for example, as China boycotted Australia, you know, over COVID. So I think there's a lot they could do. I think there's a lot they need to do, because I think Xi Jinping is testing the United States on any front. He sees in the future a clash between China and the U.S., and he wants to make sure China's in the position to win it.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
WSJ Special Access gives you a front row seat to some of the Wall Street Journal's most exciting content, like The Quirkier Side of Life, a new series that features the fun, surprising stories our reporters come across.
The chief executive walks 10,000 barefoot steps every day. He recalls stepping on a bee, which put him off earthing for a couple of days, but he got back to it.
Check out The Quirkier Side of Life on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. Before the break, Jen Psaki in that clip referenced the boycott of the 1980 Olympics. And just a little more background on that, President Carter led a movement not to participate in the Moscow Games to protest the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. And the argument you heard against that often, as Kim was making earlier, is it punishes the athletes who've been training for years, and they were not the ones who decided to hold these games in Moscow or Beijing or whatever the case may be. And notable that last year was the 40th anniversary of that Moscow boycott. Here's a piece of a statement issued by the head of the U.S. Olympic Committee. Quote, "It's abundantly clear in hindsight that the decision to not send a team to Moscow had no impact on the global politics of the era and instead only harmed you, American athletes who had dedicated themselves to excellence and the chance to represent the United States," unquote. And so, Kim, to that point, there are still athletes who were supposed to compete in those games who have not gotten over that disappointment and are very upset about it.
Right. And I guess my other argument for this, I do agree with Bill that, you know, if this was part of some giant overarching plan that against China strategy from the White House, and this was only a piece of it, that would be one thing. But when you do it in the absence of that broader strategy, and that 1980 example is a good one, again, it's mostly the athletes who get punished. And also, let me just say, too, it's also putting everything backward. The representatives of free and democratic institutions are not the ones that should be punished for the rogue behavior of bad regimes. The way that you are supposed to do this or should do this would be to turn this equation upside down and look to the International Olympic Committee to do something about rogue actors. I mean, it is simply wrong that the IOC thinks that it's acceptable that the Olympic Games are being held in a country that actually operates concentration camps. That's just wrong. And the IOC over recent years has defended Beijing, defended the decision for China, the decision to allow China to host the Winter Olympics, turned its eye to everything that's going on. In fact, that the president of the IOC, Thomas Bach, actually had a video call with Peng, the tennis player, where she said all was well. Of course, she probably wasn't speaking freely, but he, of course, just took all that at face value and used it to try to make it all go away. The IOC in the past has, in fact, and it hasn't done it often, but for a while, for instance, it banned South Africa from engaging in the Olympics because of the regime of apartheid. And what you'd really like to see is an International Olympic Committee that actually believes in the kind of spirit of the Olympics, the idea that sports are about developing humankind and promoting peaceful society. That is actually part of the Olympic Charter, those words, and used its authority to basically say that not only are they not going to reward rogue nations by allowing them to host and get all the benefits of the Olympic scenario, but also that their athletes are not going to be able to participate unless things change in the country.
Well, if the challenge is giving some incentive to the International Olympic Committee to deal with this issue, Bill, I mean, what if the U.S. announced that it would boycott future Olympics held in authoritarian countries? And the context here is that these games are set way in advance. 2024 is in Paris. 2026 is in Milan. 2028 is in Los Angeles. Presumably, there are no athletes that are currently training for the 2030 or the 2032 games. So maybe the U.S. could say, if those games are scheduled for China or Russia or a country like that, we will decline to participate. On the other hand, China would probably respond to that by saying something like, fine, we'll pass up the LA games in 2028. You'd get a fracturing maybe of the Olympic movement, and maybe that is a price worth paying. But there would certainly be a counter reaction, I think, from China.
Yeah, there would. Look, I think it's all a distraction from the real threats that China poses to us. And my fear is that going against the Olympics and punishing the athletes does nothing to change the incentives of the leaders like Xi Jinping. I don't think that they care so much. This is it's a cheap kind of a substitute for a tough approach to China. As I said, joining the TPP, boosting our military capabilities in the region, taking on Chinese spying in the U.S., those are all things that need to be done, and we're not really doing them. Right now, the most important part of a China policy, a coherent China policy, is to make sure that Taiwan has the wherewithal to defend itself. You know, it can't defeat China, but it can be kind of a porcupine, making the cost of invading Taiwan very, very difficult. And I think the free world has a huge interest in that. No China policy makes sense unless it's about preserving the way of life for the freest Chinese society in the world right now, which is in Taiwan. And I think that would greatly boost the confidence of a lot of other democracies in the region, you know, starting with Australia down there. So to me, this stuff about the Olympics, you know, it's just all a game. And, you know, once in a while, the Olympics does some good. In 1988, South Korea had the Olympics, and then there were huge protests against the regime. It was then on free. And the leading candidate for president announced, you know, that they were going to democratize. So in some ways, you could say the Olympics kind of forced the hand there. It's more likely it goes the other way. I mean, if you look at the structure of the IOC and how we vote on these games and so forth, I mean, I think it would turn a lot of people's stomachs. I don't think we can count on them. So again, I think a lot of this, in the same way, I think the focus on Kamala Harris is really about Joe Biden and his weaknesses. I think the idea of boycotting the Olympics, I fear, is to substitute gestures when we need a strong, comprehensive, and tough policy against a leader in China who's very determined to be aggressive.
I take that point, Bill, but we have an IOC, we're going to have Olympic Games, and so we ought to have a better IOC and better Olympic Games if we can improve some of the incentives. And one last thought on this is what about the sponsors of these games, Kim? The official Olympic partners this year include Intel, Visa, P&G, Airbnb, Coca-Cola. And the last of those companies, Coke, felt so strongly about Georgia's voting law that it passed this year that it issued a denunciation. So why do these companies not exert any of the pressure that they have as monetary sponsors of these games on the IOC potential future sponsors, to have them in democratic countries? And why do they not think that they are putting their reputations at risk when they end up sponsoring games in Beijing?
Perfect question. And one reason is because nobody actually questions their reputations on this. We have unfortunately moved into an era where the argument among many in the business elite and the media just gives it a pass is that well, better to engage in that market than not. But it actually, we should be exerting that pressure, and not just in terms of the IOC. I mean, we've been seeing this all over the place. You know, tech companies that have been willing to crumble in demands for censorship in countries where they operate. Other sports leagues, you know, the WTA accepted, but the NBA and others just willing to accept any level of atrocity just so that they can continue to gab their tournaments and their games and make their money. So I think, look, corporate America, often we defend it here in the country, the idea of capitalism and the notion of free market and free market players. But the press always tends to focus its ire when it comes to companies on all the wrong issues, you know, getting their hair in a knot over, for instance, executive compensation and what its levels are, et cetera. What it really ought to be sending the message is that your corporate reputation, your decision to engage with rogue regimes is what really does put a black mark on your name. And I wonder sometimes if business realized how much I think better respect and more chits they would build up with the American public if they were to take some strong stands like that on really obvious things. They don't have to jump into every political fray, but I think we can agree that human rights abuses and the censoring or captivity of star tennis players is something that is definitely worth taking a stand on.
My final thought here on the sighting of the Olympics is this secondary problem of countries that pour money into these glistening facilities, and then you can go online and find almost heartbreaking photos of abandoned stadiums in Rio, for example. And some analysts say that the host cities, a lot of them end up losing money on the deal. A few years ago, the U.S. withdrew Boston's bid for the 2024 games. There was an interesting poll that showed in the Boston area, only 40% of people supported having the games, 53% were opposed. So, Bill, I mean, you sometimes hear this idea of why not give the Olympics a permanent home somewhere? Maybe the summer games can be held in Greece. There can be a separate permanent home for the winter games. I mean, is this one solution? I mean, A, you would not have this problem of rotating countries that sometimes end up not in the games, end up not in democratic countries. And B, you would end up with permanent facilities that get taken care of and don't end up being boondoggles in these countries, these cities like Rio.
Yeah, well, I think it speaks to the kind of place where you have the Olympics. Again, in my understanding is that the games in Korea, they used a lot of the buildings, you know, to create housing and so forth for the population, designed it to be used afterward. But you're right. Look, whenever you have that much central government directed spending, it's going to be inefficient. I think holding them in Greece would be one way to relieve the pressure. But I think, you know, part of the Olympic allure is that they come to different cities around the world and people, you know, athletes get to have different venues around them. I don't know if it would be as popular. Look, again, the larger issue here is the contradictions of doing business in China. I don't really have a problem with American companies doing business in China. If you're McDonald's and you're selling cheeseburgers to Chinese people, I don't think that's a real problem. In some ways, you're bringing products to people that and services that didn't have them. The problem is, as you kind of allude to, in these authoritarian, totalitarian regimes, there's a price for that. And most of these businesses don't want to be involved in politics at all. Right. But then they're found like they in China, they've angered China because they've run a map that seems to show Taiwan as an independent country. That's kind of the price, you know, and people react different ways. The NBA, you know, sees China as a big lucrative market. And when one of their general managers seemed to support Hong Kong in a tweet, you know, they kind of apologized and groveled for it, whereas the WTA, Women's Tennis Association, I think has behaved superbly toward China. And that's the big danger. I mean, increasingly, China is not only insisting on people towing China's politically correct line in China, but outside of China, too. And so all these companies have to start asking themselves, you know, there's a price to doing business in China. And can their brand take that price? You know, again, look at the NBA, you know, touted all the athletes kneeling as their commitment to free speech, but they kind of shuffle their shoes and try to remain silent, you know, when it comes to China. And I think they're not the only business that affects this, that is affected by this dynamic.
Thank you, Bill and Kim. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back later this week with another edition of Potomac Watch.